So this morning, there are going to be three of us who speak from the pulpit. And that was a result of the conversations between Corrine and Stephen about what we were doing this morning. And one of the things that we had done was ask him to speak to us about your school and your faith. And he said, no, we come to hear about you. So we talked him into a few minutes, and perhaps another time you would come and do that with a little bit more depth and be here in the pulpit with us. So we'll start with that, and then Corrine and I are each going to speak to you. And I believe when you came in, you were handed something besides the program. And the one side of it is our beginning to really prepare for our 200th anniversary, and there's a little history of the Unitarian Church. And on the other side are our seven principles. And this is our guidance. Those principles guide us. So if you want to know more about us, I would invite you to take those home and look at them. And if you have any questions, maybe you could direct those to Stephen. And Stephen, if there are questions that we need to be answering, we will be happy to do that because you're students and you're studying. So it just seemed to Corrine and me that for us to go through the principles would get really boring. And so what we decided that the two of us would do was to speak for a few minutes about what's meaningful for us. Why do we keep showing up here? What is this Unitarian Church for us? So Corrine's going to speak first, and then I'll have a few words to say. But Stephen?
Thanks, Corrine and Karen, for your warm welcome, and it is good to be here with you this morning. This has become quite a tradition for our class to come each year, and grateful for that opportunity. I am Stephen Brubaker, administrator there at Faith Builders and Guys Mills, just a little east of you, and this is the Introduction to Philosophy class. It's called Introduction to Worldviews, and one of the goals of this class is to work at some fundamental questions of existence. In fact, there's five questions that are kind of at the heart of what we work on and talk about. Here they are. The first one is, what is real? What really is? What exists? The second is, what does it mean to be a human? What is a human being? The third is the question of, what is the good life? And fourth, what is our problem and what is the solution to the problem? I think there's a universal recognition that the world we're in, that there's problems. Well, what are they, and what are the solution to those problems? And then the last question is, how do we know which set of answers is reliable, is true, is trustworthy? And so as we ask these questions, one of our goals is to hear how others answer those questions. And that's one of the reasons we're here, and that's one of the reasons that I suggested it would be better to hear from folks here. My students get to hear enough from me. It's our goal to grow in our ability to understand others' perspectives, to listen well, and maybe to resist the impulse to be understood ourselves, before we extend that to others. And so we want to resist that impulse. Don't want to deny disagreements among us, but learn to honor and respect others in the midst of our disagreements. So one of the requirements for the class is to do a long interview. When I say a long, maybe, you know, half an hour to an hour, with someone that has a different worldview from what they would have, and then to read, to tell the story of that exchange and how this person answers these foundational questions and so on. So that's just a little bit of a peek into one of the classes that we offer there. And it really is, in many ways, similar to a Philosophy 101 course. The last number of weeks, we've been going through a brief history of thinking and just looking at some of the major philosophers and how they've answered these questions and others as well. Just a little bit about Faith Builders. We bought the old Randolph School building there in Guy's Mills back in 92, and it had been sitting empty for a number of years, and established both a day school there. It's called Faith Builders Christian School. We have around 100, 110 students there, all coming from the local community. But then we also operate a college-level program, and that's what these students are part of. And they come from, we have space for around 40. And so this is about half the group that's there. And they come from all over the U.S. I'd say, how many of you from Pennsylvania? Let's just... Okay, you see, there's a number from Pennsylvania, but then how many from, we have a couple Canadians, and then call out some of the other states you're from.
Virginia, Georgia, Kansas.
Any others? Okay. Anyway, so you kind of come from all over. We serve primarily the conservative Anabaptist community, which includes Mennonites, Beachy Amish, some Brethren groups, and so that's primarily the group that Faith Builders was formed to serve. But in addition to a day school and a college-level program, we offer their seminars, workshops, we do curriculum development for schools, and so on. So there's quite a bit of, in fact, there's 35 people on staff there, so there's quite a bit of things happening. Corrine asked if I would say something, too, about our faith tradition and some of our values. And we are Mennonites, or from the Anabaptist faith tradition, which is a tradition rooted in the conviction that Jesus of Nazareth is God, and that in him we can participate in abundant life. Anabaptists, that is an Orthodox Christian tradition, but we do emphasize some things that would be different emphasis from other Christian groups. And I'll mention three. One is we emphasize, or we put an emphasis on following Jesus, and that's in addition to faith in him. Some Christian groups, their real focus is faith in Christ. And while we would affirm that as well, we also would offer following Jesus as an appropriate emphasis as well. So ordering our lives around his teaching and example. A second emphasis for our people is a strong sense of community, of living in community, and the accountability that goes with that. And we understand this community to be a community of Christ followers who've freely chosen to follow Christ and commit to others who have made that same commitment. And then a third emphasis, and this is probably the one that most people know Anabaptists or Mennonites for, and that is that we believe that following Jesus means non-participation in violence and coercion. Historically, this is called non-resistance, or sometimes pacifism. And again, it just flows out of our understanding that we are to follow Jesus and that he calls us to that kind of loving interaction with people, even our enemies. You highlighted that this is a 200-year anniversary for you. We have a 500-year anniversary coming up. Not Faith Builders now, this is Anabaptists. And so while Anabaptists draw heavily from the early church, the New Testament, it began as a movement in the ferment of the Reformation on January 21, 1525. And that was a prayer meeting where the group that had gathered decided they were going to make their commitment to Christ known in a way that put them at odds with the state government. And so at that prayer meeting, January 21, 1525, and you can see the 500-year anniversary of that would be coming up here in a little over a year. And maybe I'll mention that some of the area Mennonite churches are planning a commemoration of that, and it would be nice to have some of you folks present for that service. Again, just very grateful for the welcome that we've received from you over the years. If any of you would like to come out and tour our campus, have lunch with us, we would just welcome that very much.
Thank you, Stephen. I want to start by saying that I know that the religious beliefs of our guests this morning are not exactly the same as mine, but I'm convinced that we share some common values, and that's what I would like to talk about this morning. Like so many Unitarians, I come from a different religious tradition. I was raised in the Catholic Church, and as a child, I loved being a Catholic. We went to Mass every single Sunday, partly because it was a mortal sin if you didn't go, and if you died with a mortal sin on your souls, you went to hell. And we were at least taught that in catechism class. But then again, if we miss Mass, and we were afraid we might die before too long, we could get our sins expunged by going to confession. And I loved going to confession, too, because afterward I felt so cleansed, I guess is the best word for it. In those days, the nuns wore long, blue, flowing habits with crisp white fabrics that encased their faces and covered their chests like a bib. And to me, they just seemed so very, very holy. I loved being sprinkled with holy water, the smell of incense burning, making the sign of the cross, genuflecting, and saying all those mysterious Latin words that were printed in our order of service. But as I emerged from my youth, I quit practicing Catholicism. And for a couple of decades, I wasn't anything, I guess you would say. But I began to realize that what I had loved about being a Catholic were the trappings, you know, the ritual, the ceremony, the pageantry, the mysterious words and the music. And most of all, the sensation of holiness, I guess, is the best word I can think of to call it. But the beliefs didn't really mesh very well with my highest values. And I would say that those highest values for me are kindness and fairness and love. And Unitarians use somewhat different words and phrases for those values, as you might notice if you look on the one side of the handout that we gave you that described the principles. Kindness is recognizing the worth and dignity of every person, and compassion in human relations, and acceptance of one another. For me, kindness means things like this: lending a hand when someone needs help, listening to someone who needs to talk, offering to do a job that nobody else wants to do. I get myself in trouble a lot of times that way. Greeting someone who looks lonely at coffee hour. Something as simple as smiling at a person you pass on the sidewalk. Fairness, to Unitarian Universalist vernacular, is justice and equity for all and the use of the democratic process. For me, Justice means things like not favoring one child over another. It means parceling out rewards according to how much effort and not just talent an employee puts into the job. It means standing up for people who haven't gotten a fair shake. It means that when you're in a position of power, you require everyone to go by the same ground rules, and you go by those ground rules yourself. Love in Unitarian speak means unconditional universal love as a grounding for all our actions in the world. For me, well, I looked up the definition of love the verb in the dictionary, hoping to find something profound and all-encompassing, and I was completely and totally disappointed in what I found. There were 19 definitions of love the noun, but only 5 definitions of love the verb, all of them profoundly inadequate in my estimation. So I'm going to let the Unitarian Universalist definition of it stand as the best one that I could find. Unconditional universal love as a grounding for all our actions in the world. And the word actions is important because while loving feels good, for me, how you feel is less important than what you do. So, love, fairness, kindness. These are the values that I think I can practice here in my church. And I don't think they're at odds at all with the values of our guests, so I hope that at least I provided a little fodder for you to have some lively discussions in your philosophy class. Thank you.
After listening to Stephen and Karina, I'm not sure what's left to say. But what I really most appreciate is after hearing from both of them, and especially Stephen, because, you know, we come because we know you because you come and you bring those wonderful pies. But we know so much more now this morning. And it's no surprise to me that we share time and space and share a meal together. When we really get to that point, which is to this point, because that's it for me. And although I'm looking at the 7 principles right now, this word isn't one of the 7 principles, but this is what is key to me about this church. It's tolerance, which is everything that you said, Stephen, which is everything that Corrine said. And that became so important to me. I was raised in a Protestant church. I had a teacher who changed my life more than almost anybody except my parents. And she was very, very Christian, and she taught us to witness to others. And I mean, I witnessed everywhere I went for a couple years. People cringed at me, backed away, stopped conversations. It didn't matter. I was speaking from my heart. Until sometime in college, I went with a friend of mine from high school, because he was a seeker as well, and we, I'll just say that I was always a spiritual seeker. My parents didn't go to church or Sunday school. I thought they were disillusioned. I wanted to go. So they sent me to kindergarten, Sunday school, and through the years, and then I learned to play the piano, and I played the piano for the children's kindergarten class. There was, after Sunday school, which was before church, there was children's church downstairs, so I want to stay for that too. You know, my parents, I don't know what they thought I was, but I know what it tells me is that I knew I was a spiritual seeker from the time I was very small, even though none of that was supported in my home. And I think that's it. If we have that sense of seeking for something more, for a greater depth, something beyond us, then follow that impulse. It's the most important one in the world. And where I got lost was at an evangelical service in a tiny little church, one of those tiny little country churches like this one. That's, the building is primarily the sanctuary and there's not much else. And the minister offered an altar call to come up and be saved. And my friend Jock and I looked at each other. We had no idea. You know, and we thought we were going to do that because, you know, we wanted to be there wholeheartedly until a couple people went up, and then the minister talked about how now they were saved, and everybody else who wasn't taking an altar call somewhere was going to burn in hell for eternity. And I just felt things fall away as I sat there because, okay, yes, I believe in God. I believe in Jesus. I believe that Jesus is God's son. I believe in all of those things. But what about those people who are never exposed historically before Jesus, the millions of people who lived, or people who live in the world who aren't exposed to Christianity? So because of lack of information, they're condemned to hell. It just didn't hold for me. And what I had to find was a way back that was not based on exclusion or exclusivity, which leads to exclusion, which leads to condemnation based on our judgment. Because, yes, there are sacred scriptures and texts, but we are all human, and everything filters through our humanness. And so when people make these separating, exclusionary statements, I'm like, how can you do that? If God is the creator of everything, probably knows some things that we don't or can't ever, because we're mortals, we're human, we're limited. And God is unlimited. So how could I possibly judge or condemn someone else? It's not my place. And so I kind of spent a long time in, as Corrine said, I wasn't really in a church. And I came to church here in 1991 because I really needed something. There were a number of things happening in my life, and I was desperate for something. And the first Sunday I came was in the summer, and I can't remember his name, but the gentleman who spoke was a Taino Indian, which are one of the tribes in the Caribbean islands. And he's up here speaking in a church. I was dumbfounded. How'd that happen? And then I learned about his background and his history, and he's part of an intertribal community that bought, this isn't part of all this, but it's just incredible to me, and it points to what I'm trying to say. They own a huge piece of property down near Dorseyville, south of in the Pittsburgh area, and they have a huge powwow every year, and there are tribes from three different states. It's the tribal, whatever they are. And it was right around my daughter's birthday, so I have friends in Pittsburgh. We'd go to the powwow every year. And one year, there's sort of this concrete mound with this big, round metal plate over it, and I asked somebody, this was a nuclear site. There were nuclear missiles. And these tribal people bought this nuclear site and turned it into a place of love and celebration and gathering. I mean, there it was. And that's why I'm here, because when I came here, I found that level of tolerance and acceptance to such a point that whatever I'm saying this morning or whatever Corrine has already spoken to you, I could ask any one of those of us who are in this congregation, and you get a different story. And that's why I love it, because everybody brings themselves. And whatever we are, whoever and however we are here, we are welcomed. That's why I recited that. Corrine and I were sitting here and we're going over the program, and she says, do you have any opening words? And I went, no, do you? And immediately, Rumi's, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, and the poem goes on and ends, come, yet again come. He was a Sufi. I didn't even know what a Sufi was when I first started reading him. It didn't matter. I knew where his heart was, and I knew what he was inviting me in my heart. And so that's why I'm a Unitarian, because I can say that without reservation, without exclusion, with no judgment, come. I felt that call. I'm still here, and so grateful for all of you who are also here. Let us be tolerant with all.